What's going on, crew? Think Dez. I'm pretty sure that's. Yep, there we go. Awesome. Dez is one of my new guys. He's in the chat now. First time jumping on the group call.
Welcome, Des. Cody, you're sitting. How you feeling, buddy?
A little sore today.
Got it, full body.
Full body yesterday, but just the I did 20 reps, three sets of the bar, and I'm barely sitting today.
It's okay, man. Take advantage of it. I think we would all love that if we could do that right now. So take
Oh,
advantage.
like I said, it burns in all the right places. All the joints feel fine, lubricated. It's all in the right spots, but we'll see how she goes.
You go to Pierre today, Cody, or
No, I'm in my Belleville business today. So
nice.
I gotta go to Good Life after this call.
Attaboy.
Pierre left here yesterday.
Nice.
Mean, I guess we'll take a second as some more people kind of trickle in. Dez, if you want to share anything, man, I know that, it's pretty much kind of been like your first week, kind of just mentally where your head's at with stuff as far as things starting out.
Yeah, good. Starting to kind of get into the flow of things. It was a little kind of rusty to start with, kind of getting familiar with everything. But yeah, it's really good. I'm enjoying kind of having like a set kind of goal. Because, like, obviously, I've talked about having all this other sort of information. It's just good to have it all in one place that I can kind of focus on in one place as opposed to kind of watching a podcast here, watching a podcast there. It's just all in one area, which is helping a lot.
Love it, man. I mean, I could speak for my guys, but between our coaches' calls, I think like a big part of these group calls, obviously, is everybody's kind of at a different part. And there's obviously so many things that are similar that we can kind of pull from each other, which I think is cool between this call and the Telegram group, the academy training, what it kind of looks like. So, yeah, man, it's awesome. It's great to have you here.
Yeah, thanks.
I just
Glad to
saw
be here.
Keith pop on. I don't know where he went. Anyway, there he is, trying to hide. Thumbs up. Good deal. Awesome.
Always hiding, me.
Good deal.
So, Andrew, did you want to talk about the Marbella trip at all? I know you said you had a client just before we start.
Yeah, so to be the bummer of all the news, more than anything, I wish that I could be there for the Marbella camp, but just based on the series of events, I've got like three family birthdays and my mom's going through some treatment and stuff right now, so just timing wise, that one's not going to work out. So for everybody that does go, obviously it's an awesome time, and I believe the one following that will be in September, yeah. And then obviously Costa Rica is planned at the end of the year again.
But they
So
haven't
that's.
announced where the September one is, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Don't think they have.
Costa Rica in December.
Okay.
Good deal.
Yeah. I'm not I'm it sucks. I was really looking forward to it, man, for more than one reason. But the first camp, Costa Rica was absolutely incredible. Anybody who went, you'll love it. If you get a chance, if you can go to Marbella, it'll be life-changing, like very genuinely. There's a consistent theme where I don't think we don't hear it, where people who go to these camps, it's probably something that Mats will probably attest to saying almost daily when he trains with guys like Ben, is that it's like almost like oh my God, I didn't know I had to train that hard. Like there's always a new level of training hard, right? And when you're around a bunch of guys who are getting after it just makes this cap pull off. So everybody loved it. Everybody's progress when they came back from the first camp was absolutely phenomenal. I'm pretty sure like the site, everything, it's all up, right, Mats and Andrew? Like for my beer, people sign up. Yeah, everything's all up. We even have some guys on the call tonight that have been to Costa Rica that could attest to it, like Nate and Vamshi.
Nate's here? Oh, I didn't know. Oh, there he is. Look at that. I know Vamshi was. I saw Jimmy. Yeah. Like you guys have spoken about it before. If you'd like to, actually, I think I've heard Nate talk about it. Vamshi, would you like to pop off and just talk about it for just 2 seconds, your opinions of the last camp? We got you, brother.
He's playing the find the unmute button.
Yeah, that was incredible, actually. Right, I could call in my workout life before Costa Rica and after Costa Rica. So that's how huge impact it had. So I mean, you can see, right? Like, you know, I've gained a lot of muscle after coming back from the camp. The intensity has gone up, not just in the workouts, but everywhere else. So being more mindful, like, you know, doing exactly what you need to do. I mean, especially the intensity. You are right, Steve. I didn't know that I have to work that hard, right? Like, so, and the other thing that I think Coach Chris said, like, you know, you got one more rep, right? So muscles doesn't know the numbers, right? You have to fatigue them, right? Like, they don't know 10 reps, all those things. So those are the kind of things. And then the angles and everything, it's really helpful. And the breath work and everything, it's like wholesome package.
What I loved about it, just seeing it from like the outside in, watching all the clients and everybody who attended go through it, was just how beneficial the breath work was. Anybody who went, like Nate, I know that you agreed with that. Like, you guys all seem to get massive benefits from that. Just seeing people go from like just walking in this place of like, what's today? Then they get into a position where they're trying to, you know, just be more aware of what's going on kinesthetically. And then they took that into the workouts. Like, everybody talked about how they had better mobility, how they're able to feel muscles better, how they're able to like organize their own patterns better. So it was really cool. So like, yeah, there's more than just that. So if you get a chance, you got to go. And if it's not this one, then find a time that you can go to one, because it absolutely will change how you look at exercise. Yeah, Andrew, is there anybody on the call right now you'd like to like call out if everybody's doing like an amazing job? I'm just looking through right now, see if anybody's on there. Hey, Greg.
I mean, Josh, Keith, Dez. Dez, we kind of touched base on starting out. Everything's been great so far. Josh is now going through a bit of a cut phase. Everything's been going smooth so far. Josh, you want to share where you're at with things right now?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's my second cut phase. And yeah, I mean, it's going great. I think it's hard. Cutting is hard. And I think it shines a light on like how difficult your workouts need to be and how exhausting that they need to be for you. Cause they're the polar opposite of trying to gain muscle. But I think like that balance of figuring out both of those things and always trying to kind of keep the tempo where it needs to be, and you know, just like putting that phone down and just like focusing on what it is you're supposed to be doing, keeping the timeline locked. It's like a big thing where I'm at right now is, you know, I think you told me like this needs to take you 40 minutes to warm up and to knock out these three supersets. And like, I'm dialed in right at, you know, push myself to finish in 37 minutes, or I did it, you know, on Monday at 38 minutes, I want to get it at 36 minutes today. And so, yeah, it's been great. I feel great. I feel lean. I feel like all the hard work that's been put in and not seeing necessarily the quote unquote results that I want to see are definitely coming. But it's definitely, it's not a time to, it's continuing to work really hard.
Love it, man. Love it.
What about yourself, Greg? I haven't really ever heard you talk too much about your clients in this, because I don't think we, you know, we always get the pleasure of you talking about your specialties. Got any clients in the call right now?
Yeah, I've just got one. Only just recently back. Sean's on. Sean won client of the month with Gav.
No
three,
way.
Three, four, 5 months ago. So he's a rock star. So pushing now to get him the leanest he's ever been. He wants to push it kind of beyond what his expectations were at the beginning. So I'm really looking to see what he can. I'm really looking forward to see what he can do over the next 3-4 months. Got confidence in him.
Awesome. That is awesome. Since we're talking about cutting, it might be a good segue to the conversation. I'm going to call out Jimmy, just because he is cutting right now. And I'm sure he can attest to the fact that it ain't all sunshine and rainbows all the time. And sometimes it's immediate. No, he's like, no, but sometimes you're in there for the reason and you got to get in there and, you know, get it done. And that's the whole point. Right. But yeah, like the segue I want to talk to you guys today about, guys, was like, just like, what do we do here as coaches, and what's the whole focal point of this whole process? And like, what do we do to optimize? I like to think of this as like, we have two areas we're trying to improve on consistently. That's in the gym and outside of the gym. And just disclaimer, if anybody wants to talk, just please unmute yourself. Just interrupt me, just so I don't end up ranting, because I do want you guys to throw your own thoughts out here, because there's a lot of cool, just thoughts everybody has from their own, observation of how they work in it and what they struggle with. Because you take a guy like Mats, and he's gonna be so dialed in, he's probably gonna be struggling with something completely different than something like a guy like Josh, who's going through a cutting phase. It's a completely different process for him, right? Then you got a guy like me who's, in my garage, and then that's a different process than somebody like Andrew who's rolling around on mats. So we all have different experiences, and the whole point is to understand, even though we're all chasing different goals and different experiences, we're all really trying to do the same thing, like optimize our ability to create some kind of stimulus or adaptation and then recover from it, right? Everybody's trying to do the same thing. So what is that? And in the gym, I'm thinking, our goal, and you've heard Ben talk about this, is trying to make or create maximum stimulating reps. So what does that mean? Does anybody want to like just quickly either write it in the chat box or just tell me what you think stimulating reps means? Because it sounds like that might be just, oh, cool, good reps, but there's kind of an undertowing thought I want you guys to bring into your minds when you think stimulating reps. Anybody just throw it out there. What does that mean to you? Perfect. You know what? I love this one thing you said. The physiological, the psychological. I had a client last night, and one of the things we talk about is upregulation of like muscle contraction or the neurological connection to be able to actually stimulate high threshold motor units. So how much can you actually contract your muscles? If you take like Olympic weightlifters, I think have been documented at the highest degree of this, which is why you have guys like, if you haven't checked them out, look at Liu Zhaojun. He's like 148 pounds, little Chinese weightlifter who can snatch 448 pounds. Like, in what world does that make sense? It doesn't make sense. Like, you shouldn't be able to do that, but they can do it because their power output's so crazy, right? So when we're looking at stimulating reps, it's not just in the gym, it's the work before the gym. And that's why it's so important to set, and I like what Josh had talked about in terms of like how it's different now because he's cutting, right? You can't have the same expectations, because if you have your lifestyle that hasn't been set to really get you in the mode to go in tonight to just obliterate yourself, then how are you supposed to be able to have the gas pedal to be able to lean into the reps that are gonna be stimulating? Like, how does that make any sense, right? You guys have all heard Ben say the biggest stress in your day should be the gym, right? So I had a client last night I was working with. She had a hard time in her session, and the second it got hard, she stopped. Like, the second. Have you guys ever felt that? Where like you're leaning into a rep and it's almost like it turns off, right? And then have you ever felt the opposite in a day or a session where you're doing heavy bench press, and then when it starts slowing down, it feels good and you actually lean into it, and on the way you're pushing, but you can contract harder and you actually lean into a couple more reps, whereas normally that might have just turned right off. So it's really interesting stuff, because that's what we're getting into when we're trying to talk about stimulating reps. I've mentioned this thought of acceleration, deceleration as a key point that you guys can use in your own training to kind of, take this bird's eye lens and look at your own training and say, am I doing this? Am I creating stimulating reps? Because we've all thought we've worked hard, right? We've all thought we've worked hard, and I'm sure we have. But if you were to take that lens and say, hey, I'm watching myself, there's a camera, you look, you're a little fly in the wall, and you're watching your reps, and every single rep is actually the same speed. They haven't slowed down yet. Did you get a stimulating rep? I would say probably not. You haven't even worked yet. The set has not begun, right? So how do we make that happen? And that's again priming the nervous system, making sure we're recovered from the last session, making sure we have a high degree of competence, skill, and ability, and then making sure we actually are in the right, I guess we have like a vision and some kind of understanding where we want to go. Because if we're doing this for no purpose, then it's obviously going to be very, very tricky for somebody to kind of lean into it that hard. And that's what was the in my situation with my client last night, that was actually the case. So this idea of stimulating reps, our job as coaches is to give you a program that takes care of any lacking areas or any opportunity areas of opportunity that you can grow, gain range of motion, gain muscularity, gain competence, stability, skill in, and then give you a program that maximizes on that and takes into account recovery, so you can rinse, repeat, right? Keep on developing, rinse, repeat, recover, and get better, so you can do it again and do it again. And if we're doing it wrong, you don't recover, you get weaker, you get in pain, or if you're doing it wrong, the things aren't being met, right? So in True Coach, you'll all see certain little parameters that we throw in there, things like tempo. And I promise you, nobody listens, but it's okay. You can start now. That's a good thing. That's why we're talking. So if you look at tempo, we have four numbers. Some coaches will do it backwards. I do eccentric pauses, concentric pauses. But what I want you guys to do from now on, this will, I promise you, this will make your training better. Jimmy, you're gonna nod along with me. If you look at a squat and we have something like 2 seconds, followed by 1 second pause on the bottom, and then a 1 second concentric. So you're exploding up, and then you're holding for 1 second at the top, and you're holding yourself to the constraints of that tempo. Then what that's going to actually do in the background is that's going to govern any bad reps. It's going to say, you can't do bad reps now. You're not going to be able to lean into those bad reps. And then because you're not doing bad reps, what's going to happen is in 6 months, you won't be in pain. In 6 months, you won't be afraid of your sessions. You guys ever gotten like the butterflies walking into a session? Because you're kind of like afraid of what you can do to yourself. You're like, oh, I'm not really sure. Or maybe there's like a little bit of like, oh, I don't want to do this session because I've had pain before. I don't want to do a bench press or this because there's like this pain. It's this lingering thought. It's not like you're actively hurting, but it's like, oh, I don't want to do it. And then what happens is like, well, Jimmy, I'm going to use your experience. Like, NO explode. yeah, Jimmy, like your experience was that if you were going into your leg workout, taking that tempo, it actually was like, hey, let's just slow this down and lean on the opportunity of experience or experimenting, experiencing like range of motion, right? Just lean on it. Like, and then it took your workouts to the next level, your quads took off and you got stronger. And it was cool to see you get competent with it too, because you weren't afraid of the sessions. You were like, I want to do this now because it's not scary. Because that's the whole thing, right? Or Nate, I remember you asking me before in the past, you were like, how do I know if I've gone too far in a set and now I'm doing bad reps? Or how do I know if I'm cheating? Or how do I know when that happens? And so that's why we have these tempo parameters, because like we know the job. So why are we doing, and that, I think in your case it's bent over row. Like, why are we doing the bent over row? Are we trying to pull or are we trying to, you know, is it an exercise in anti-flexion, bracing? Is it an exercise in trying to train your lats and scapular function? Like, who knows? What's the point? And do you know? And the next thing is like, are you able to do it with the weight you've picked for the reps your coach is asking with that tempo? And if you are, then try more weight. If you're not, then that's your answer, right? But the question is, it, or sorry, the rather the thought would be, if you're not able to do that, then what would happen is, you know, by association, now you're kind of getting into those cheater reps, right? So do you guys understand what I'm trying to get at with the whole stimulating reps thought? We're in there to experience like the full range of motion and try to get a response from that, right? Because if we can do that, we can gain movement mastery. And then we turn this thought of trying to gain mastery into mastery, and we can start exerting like champs where we just go and do our work, which is grow. So I think that there's this, do you guys on Instagram often? Yeah, enough people are on Instagram to kind of know what to nod along. Yeah, there's a Matt, you probably agree with me. There's like this push now for ultra nuanced movement for people who haven't deserved it, right? And it's like, what are you doing? Like the people grabbing like a 10-pound cable and like side crunching it for their lats. I'm like, you're not doing what you think you're doing, right? And then you see a guy like Dorian Yates bent over rowing 500, and you're like, you kind of need to learn how to do that, right? But it doesn't mean do it with bad form. So there's this thought that you can get ultra nuanced, and for some reason, fitness has kind of gotten away from the strength category. And I don't understand why that's happened, because muscles really only do get stronger. That's really all that happens, right? You show me, I think that every single person in this room right now would nod along and say yes, that if every single one of you could right now bench 500 pounds, you'd be a bigger human, right? Yes. So that's unarguable. You'd all agree. You'd all be bigger humans if you could bench 500 pounds for reps. Right. So why is that not a thought for us to try to get things stronger? Right. Because it kind of is in the beginning. Remember when you first started in the beginning, you went to the gym and you're like, I can't bench. I remember the first time I went, I couldn't bench the bar. I literally couldn't. I put the 25 on a side and it barely got up. It was like that. Right. And then I was like to my partner, take that off. I can't do that. And I then I couldn't even push the bar. I couldn't do anything. I was like, oh my God. And so my only thought was, I need to get to a plate aside. That is my goal. My goal is a plate aside. And then once I got to that, what's the next logical thing? You know, two plates aside. That was the cusp of my mental superiority. And then once it was two, it was like three plates aside. Let's keep going with this. And then people forget that that's really all it is. And then our job is to simplify that and make it more comprehensive and more catered to the individual that is actually going through, the dynamic flow that is life, kids, work, gut health, all these different things that could be preventing you from doing dumb things like chasing three plates when you can't do it properly. But I'm kind of ranting. So what I want to show you guys is a video of a guy named Joe Sullivan. Joe Sullivan, do you guys know who he is? No, nobody? Oh, you guys got to up your game. Okay, I want you guys to find out. You're gonna witness Joe Sullivan right now. He attempted, I don't think he made it. He attempted the world record squat for 525 for reps, trying to take the record from Tom Platz. And Joe Sullivan, by the way, he's basically a fridge with legs. So he's made to lift heavy things. But that said though, this is an example. And the picture I'm trying to paint is if you can gain movement mastery, then what happens is you can turn exercise into output. And then that's our goal. And then you'll only be creating stimulating reps. So I think I can share my screen. I'm going to show you guys this video. You guys can see it? Yeah? Nods? Okay. I want you guys to pay attention to his rep quality too. Like, does any rep look any different? Well, we saw one thing happen there. Guys ever worked that hard? You guys ever worked that hard? We just fell over. There was a video of Jay Cutler talking about how when him and his friends used to train, they used to do legs until their noses bled. Like, they didn't stop until your nose bled. Like, you weren't allowed. Like, isn't that sick? So I'm not saying you need to go there. The point is that you can go there. That's what I kind of wanted to paint the picture for. A lot of people have been, again, the internet is full of this crap now where people are talking about like keeping reps in reserve. And these things, they can be useful, but the whole point is you have to understand why. I don't think there's a single person in this call right now, including myself, who can go to a point where they're going to collapse like that in something as skillful as a squat. Like, I don't think it's going to happen. I think something else is going to come up. You're going to start breathing too heavy. You're going to start losing balance. You're going to start losing your brace. Something's going to come in the way of that, right? I think you'd all agree. And the point is that, like, if we're thinking about maximum stimulating reps, you have to be realizing that, like, I would say, unless you're world class like Joe, and he has the world record, by the way, for the maximum squat. I think when he did it, he did 824 pounds for a single at 218 pounds. So it's insane. Like, his lifts are crazy. but this guy, he has this mastery, right? And he can go there because he has that mastery. He can take himself to that point. So is there a way, or is there, what am I trying to say? Is there something that you'd have to conquer in order to get yourself to be able to exert that much to get those stimulating reps? So I'm gonna open it up for 2 seconds so you guys can talk about this, because I want you to kind of brainstorm this for a second. Stimulating reps, what are the bottlenecks?
I think from what you've said so far, what you're alluding to is that most people will try to increase the stimulus by either by increasing the load, and execution mastery comes before all that, and that's why we tend to take a step back sometimes with a lot for a lot of us, because once you nail that part, then you can lean more into either increased load or tempo manipulation. And you just got to trust your coach to do that.
Love it. Love it. What else you got, guys? Well, while you guys are thinking, if you want to ask, please unmute yourself. I'll throw this out at you, okay? Do you guys recognize that exercises don't grow muscles? Tension grows muscles, right? We use exercises to elicit tension on muscles. They're choices, they're vehicles, they're whatever word you want to use. They're an option, right? 1,000 ways to skin a cat. Like, Matt's has got different dimensions than me. He's going to find exercises or machines fit him better than me. And that's just the way it is. Doesn't mean he's right or I'm wrong. It doesn't mean anything. It just means that they're better for him because he's found that, because he's got that mastery, right? And you'll know because these people, their results will show, right? I've never seen somebody who knows how to train their biceps have crappy biceps. I think that would work for everybody, right? And so if we think about that, we take it to the next level where we let go of the old school belief that this thing grows this. And you see all the time, a lot of people will say like glute thrusts grow your glutes, maybe. Or they say even RDLs grow your glutes, maybe. But why? What is it about the RDL that will grow your glutes? Or spin it on itself. What won't grow your glutes if you do it incorrectly in an RDL? Well, if you do your Romani deadlifts with your lower back, the second you try to get into deep hip flexion, you get into spinal flexion. So if you start rounding your back, doesn't necessarily mean it's inherently dangerous. If you look at a guy, what's his name? PH deadlift is his tag on Instagram. The guy's massive. I know his name off the top of my head. Anyways, the guy has spine erectors that look like cables that would hold up a windmill, and the guy can deadlift 1,000 pounds. So yeah, he's going to have some lumbar flexion in that, right? I think Ben even said before as well, didn't Ben say that, Matt, but how his spine erectors were just gigantic.
Yeah. Right? If you want proof, just Google it.
Yeah. It's like, that's disgusting. And when I deadlifted with Ben, I was like, I understand why, because that's how he moves, right? And the thing is, same kind of thing, like the opposite would be for me. I have longer legs, so I'm in my hips more, and that's what's going to grow, right? So when we look at opportunities, like, so Ben would have to do different things for his glutes than me. So I can't definitively say this is for the glutes. That's not how it works. We know what the glutes do, and it's our job to pick exercises that let you express that form to get the glutes to work, and then we create stimulating reps by going to the point where Joe Sullivan did, right? Does this concept make sense to you guys so far? Any questions so far?
I think a key takeaway there too for all of us, and what Steve's trying to say, is that the tension doesn't need to be to the point where you get a nosebleed and you're about to turn into King Kong. But where most of us are stopping with tension once it's created, and that point of getting to where you would get a nosebleed is a massive distance. And we're still stopping at like only the beginning. You could still push a little bit further in those levels. But obviously, yeah, we would never encourage you guys to go to the point where you're going to get a nosebleed and an aneurysm or something.
Well, we've been working with Beardsley, right? And we haven't gotten, he hasn't talked to us about this yet, but I know he will. There's a lot of research now coming out. So guys, Chris Beardsley is one of the leading researchers right now in the world on hypertrophy, right? And there's a lot of research talking about how, like, you can practically take your muscles to any experiential level safely again, of tension. They won't stop. They will probably always keep going. That's really actually what happens. So that's going to kink out first. And that's kind of the point, right? Or again, some other bottleneck. That's what I was trying to allude to earlier. It's like the bottleneck will happen. You'll start breathing too fast. And so you can chase it too much. Like, you see some people try to chase the bottlenecks too much, where it's like, if you see Joe Sullivan, like he almost passed out. Should somebody go to him and say, do more cardio? It's like, no, he just squatted 520. It's like, cardio is not going to help that. He's going to die. So like, you have to realize it's like the chasing the bottleneck is a cool option when you're having a problem in the beginning, but it's a different conversation. But yeah. So when we're looking at exercises as an opportunity to grow muscles and elicit tension to get stimulating reps, the next thought is, what are we doing outside of the gym to make sure that we are recovering from this said stimulating rep or from the intense that we subject ourselves to, right? So you guys have all had a top five. And I think this is, again, if I was to pick on the gym part, which is the fitness gurus who are talking about these shortened ranges and squeezing things with like 2 pounds, thinking that they're going to grow, or people using bands and stuff like that. Like, I saw somebody send a video to me the other day about this guy was using a band to do a row, and he's twisting it. And I was like, that is so complicated. Like, half of my clients would probably sack themselves before they do one row. It's like, what? What's the point of this? It's so silly. And the whole point is, they're trying to, it's fancy for Instagram, but the other side of it would be the biohackers who are getting so biohacky, but not even working out, right? And we see that all the time too. It's like, is this for me? Should I do red light therapy? Should I do the breathing? Should I do these kind of things? And again, it's important to realize these things are all very valid and they all have tons of research. And I've experimented with all of them. But it's again context specific, and our job is to help you realize why we're doing them, but not to make this overshadowing thing that like you have to wake up and spend 30 minutes doing gratitude journal, then do this, then do this. And by the time you're done, you have a 3-hour morning routine that takes over your life and you don't even work out because you're burnt out and it drags, right? So what I would encourage you guys to do, and this is something, Jimmy, maybe if you can pop off, because we worked on this, I think I suggested this last week, was look at your lives. And take a piece of paper and on both sides, write down sympathetic, write down parasympathetic. And I think, Nate, I talked to you about this as well, right? And what you guys can do to right now start edging your recovery to be better is literally write that down and start filling out the things that you do in your day on both sides and see if you're in balance. Because I know half the time I'm not in balance. I am a sympathetically driven guy. If you haven't noticed already, that is how I'm going to be. And Max is like, yes. But that's the thing, right? And so it's like, that's going to be, I'm going to have to lean on those things heavily. That's why you'll see me do these things where I'm like, hey, I need to do like sauna for relaxation, or I'll do like cold tub or something like that. But Jim, I think, no, Nate, I think you were talking about how sauna is very stressful for you, right? It actually like amps you up. So that's something that's, pay attention to that, right? Whereas like Jimmy looks like a little old lady in his sauna. Just, I'm gonna get him some herbal tea. And it's like, this is the best. But the point is, like, if you compare this list, then you can be like, okay, so am I recovering? Because you see, okay, so this guy has 2 hours of cardio, he has 2 hours of workouts, he's sleeping 3 hours a night, he's eating 1600 calories, and then he's asking his coach why he has joint pain. Right. Well, we're laughing, but do you know how common this is? Okay, so coaches, I'd love for you to kind of pop off because you're all smiling right now. Please, I want you to talk about this for a second. Greg, go.
It brought someone particular to mind for me in regards to like someone who was like, I'm not growing. And like you said, you break down training efficiency, how well, how often. And this guy was great, man. Like, I don't think he ever missed a workout, but he wouldn't grow. And as he dug deeper into it turns out he was getting up. So he was going to bed about 9. And to make sure, because his day was so packed, he was getting up at 1 a.m. to train. And that was his goal. And it was like, the stimulus occurs while you train, but the actual adaptation tends to happen while you sleep. And that's one of the things where you're talking about balancing these things. And I'm not one of these people either who like bases their ability to be able to train just off their HRV. I remember like there was one of my old pals, he broke the British record for squatting. So he was 80 kilos and he squatted 375 kilos. And he used to, when HRV started first coming around, he goes, I never would have squatted if I based everything on my HRV. So there's balance there as well. But it's when you notice those kind of things, that's not overtraining, that's under recovering. So if you're finding that training is driving down your HRV, chances are that it's the other end, that other side of the page that Steve's talking about that you need to balance out.
Yeah, dude, and there's a hidden little gem in there as well that you kind of said without saying, which is that, like, remember that recoverability is trainable. It is trainable because, like, think about it just logically. If a person is only able to recover from, said stimulus, and they walk in and they're day number one, their day number one looks like go pick up a 5-pound dumbbell, do a set, and you can't move your arms because they're noodles. Well, Cody, like, just smile at the camera, buddy. Day number one, right? So that's day number one. And then his recovery system is like, this is all I can handle. I'm gonna be dead for a week. That's okay. That's awesome. But then what happens is in a year, he'll be laughing at that. He'll be like, I can't believe how far I've come. And his system can recover from that more in a year faster. So how did that happen? Right? Recoverability gets better. And that's why these people are always trying to lean on it, like the top athletes in the world. Only care about recovery because they know. Actually, it was in, do you guys follow CrossFit at all? I always get his name, Matt Fraser. You guys know who he is? Yeah. He talked about that, how he actually went into a gym with it was a prospective coach. And he was saying that the coach looked at him and he's like, don't you come in here thinking that you're better than people. Don't come in here thinking that you're going to outwork them. Because everybody's working here. Every single person is working at their max. They're all trying relatively as hard as you are. But where you can beat them is the 23 hours of the day outside the gym. That's where you can beat them. Do better there. Because these guys are going out and having nachos after. Right? And that's kind of the thought. And so when it comes down to these modalities that we would suggest, like they're cool, but they're not going to solve for growth if you haven't created the stimulus. And they're not going to be some kind of panacea or some kind of godsend that's going to get you results if that hasn't been taken care of in the gym. Does that make sense, guys? That has to happen there. So how do you, and this is, I don't want, really want an answer. I want you to think about this. How are you going to go into your workout today, tonight, tomorrow, and guarantee you're going to grow? What would be the thing? What would be the thought? Because if you're doing it for growth, right? Unless you're like Josh and you're in there, or Jimmy, like you're in there for dieting, because you're trying to just kind of exist and get Groundhog Day, right? But like, assuming you weren't, what would you guys be doing today to make sure that you could grow, right? Andrew, what about you, buddy?
Specific to the last question or
Yeah,
the
just
new?
in terms of like, in terms of the outside recovery component.
For anyone that has little ones, the component of getting the most out of your sleep, and just I talk about this a lot of just having systems in place. So what is a week's worth of having groceries on hand? What does that look like? What's the time commitment? How long is it going to take to cook these meals? If you're cutting, what do your macros look like? All of those things. So it's less of a thought or the potential for overwhelm. Well, it's like, man, like I'm freaking starving. I don't know how long it's going to take to cook this meal. And then maybe we color outside the lines and grab something else in the meantime, right? So to be able to have things set in place so there's no second thought or inner chatter about it, and you could stay disciplined to the T and just. If there's moments of overwhelm and it feels like there's a lot, consolidate and just focus on the one biggest thing. Like whatever that is, acknowledge what it is, share it with your coach and figure it out. Like that's done wonders for me. And like I said, just the it can be so quick to, as we talk about fitness and training and going into a bulk or a cut to in a matter of minutes, completely start talking and thinking about a dozen different things because you saw somebody do it one way once and we're not that other person, period, right? And so what I've really appreciated since joining Muscle Intelligence is just the sheer volume of all of our clients to be able to sift through the trends and the data of what works and what doesn't. And the irony in the whole
I'm
thing
getting hit
is,
again.
Keep
Gabe?
talking.
Oh, I thought he was asking a question. Yeah, the irony a lot of times is the majority of the answers are not sexy that are very impactful, right? Like when we think about sports, everybody wants to slam dunk, everybody wants to shoot three pointers from the half court line. But the people that can dribble extremely well, everything else is perceived easier. Therefore, they're able to put more focus into the things that maybe people don't always dot the I's and cross the T's on, right? It's like the whole thing with nutrition. Like you have to earn the right by tracking your food to be able to relatively accurately eyeball what's on your plate and what you're doing there during the times when I don't believe that. Until the end of time, none of us are going to track all of our food, but there's going to be periods where you definitely need to. And if you're at a point where, say, you're in a cutting phase and things are potentially lagging, that's maybe a focus point. If you're not weighing at all and you're kind of in a stagnant position, that's what I would draw my attention to. And it's never from a space of like self-criticism. It's all simply just trying to figure out what the thing is, low-hanging fruit. Move on to the next thing.
That's awesome, man. I'm going to add to that. I brought this up on our call this week. I think it's very applicable right in here, which is direction, right? It's like, so you can identify that low-hanging fruit and so you can act on it. And I think that everybody, if it, and this is, again, something you guys can kind of just like, look at the sky and think on it, is do you guys know what you're getting out of this week? Do you know what your results should be? Because it should be happening, right? That's what I think can happen too often is people get complacent. People can get complacent. They think the results happen slower. I have this thought that it's like results happen like faster than we think, but slower than we want. And they're always happening. It's always it, like it, Dorian Yates did a post on a little while back where he was saying like if you're doing this program and it's like it's been a month and you haven't seen the results you want, like again you're not Mr. Olympia in a month, but you're not seeing results. Are you just gonna do it again and think it's gonna work next month? It's like no, it should be happening. But it's become almost like popularized that we shouldn't be seeing results that fast, that people just think it's that slow, right? Like I've had people legitimately show me or tell me that they don't think that they can grow because they're over 40. Like actually, and it's like it's really sad to hear that that's what they think. Like they can't grow muscle past 40. Are you kidding me? It's like I'm almost there. That sucks. I guess I'm gonna be done. I guess I'm done. So the whole point is like if you look at this as an opportunity, it's like, well, what is the direction? What am I trying to achieve? Because you got a coach here. Every single person has a coach. So, like, if you don't know, then chances are your coach doesn't know. Or if you don't know, you haven't asked and you haven't actually thought about where you're trying to go, which means your top five isn't an arrangement. Your workouts probably aren't an arrangement, which means everything's probably lacking this vision, right? So, if you were to dissect this down to the first point, it's like, what is the goal? So, think everybody right now, try to think about what you would define a goal as versus an aspiration. What's the difference? So I would love to have a Lamborghini in my driveway. I'm not going to do anything for it. That is simply not going to happen. Don't care, right? But my goal is to be incredibly mobile, fit, always at least always sub 15 body fat percentage, be able to have certain lifts. My goal this week is to deadlift 500 for six in a row, and then I got to be able to do these things. Like that's how I exist, right? So what are your goals? What are your aspirations, right? It's not bad to have aspirations, but the thing is, I think sometimes people say things like, oh, I want to do this, and then they're not actually setting the actions, and I want to get to 10%. Okay, so 10% is pretty significant, right? There's going to be some like Matt, you've been probably 10% a large majority of your life. So I would say there's some significant sacrifices you have to be willing to prepare yourself for, right? Like it's not the same life as 15%. You're saying no to wine. You're saying no to these things, right? And that's going to come with the goal. No different than saying I'm going to deadlift 500 pounds. Like you got to make sure mobility is on point. You got to make sure these things are on point. So it gives you weekly and daily action items. Whereas, an aspiration is like, yes, I want to do this. I want to hit this. Or even to the opposite, being passive in your goals and saying I just want to exist this week. How many times have you guys caught yourself saying that? I just got to get through the week. I just got to do this, right? And people will they'll pass it on the coach. And then what happens is the system starts becoming complacent. So what I'm trying to pass off to you guys now is like, if you take that thought that Andrew was going on, and if you just kind of bring some direction to your days, to your week, then you'll notice every single day you'll be able to walk out with progress. You'll 100% see it because you'll immediately identify the thing you're not doing. You'll be like, okay, so if my goal this week is to grow, then there's no option. I have to eat. I have to hit my macros. But I bet you could probably, I probably get 50% of the people in here right now who want to grow and stay lean, right? So that means that right now you're going to have contradicting beliefs. You're going to try to grow, but then you're going to eat too little. So then what's going to happen is you're going to stall your progress. Nate, you put the smile away. You're like, yeah. But that's the thing. It's like, we have to think like this. So it's like, it's not bad. I get it. We all want it. That's amazing. Strong, jacked, and lean. That's the holy trifecta. Why not, right? But if we're trying to do this logically, it's like, no, set your actions in order. Because if you have that direction, immediately you'll know what you're not doing. Immediately. Or if that's actually too hard and you're like, but I really do want to be jacked and lean, right? Then just arrange it on a hierarchy and set dates and realize that the only reason why you might have this issue with holding off and being like, well, I don't want to do it right now, or I want to do it right now, is maybe just because of confidence, and the whole confidence is going to come in the process through achievement, right? So, guys, we have 15 minutes left. I'd like to kind of just talk to you guys about your thoughts in this whole process. again, just going over things like simulating reps, going over things like recovery mechanisms. Any questions you might have about that? Keith, I haven't heard you talk yet today, buddy. I'd like to pick on you a little bit. You're usually pretty vocal.
Well, if I don't deserve that, can you hear me?
Yeah, I gotcha.
I think thinking on this, I think you've said it a couple of times, Steve. Like for me, it's sticking to all the protocols. Like, well, sometimes I'm in the middle of a set and it's everything, tempo, form, tension, and sometimes my brain spins on everything. And that's kind of where I get stuck because Andrew's very good on my form and watching me and making sure it's right. But it's that sometimes I'm like, oh shit, is my tempo right? Is my form on? Is this on? And then I'm like, oh, actually, I've got three more reps to go. Oh my, and sometimes the concentration goes. So I think it's finding that for me, I find the balance of what am I prioritizing? What am I focusing on? What should I be focusing on? And that kind of catches me.
Yeah.
So I don't know if
Yeah.
there's any tips or genius advice there, but Andrew's been great on the form and the tempo and keeping me to it, but it's in my own head that I have that kind of challenge.
You know what I found, and I'll just before insert before sorry, before you interject, Andrew, what I would suggest is just talk about what the intention of those things are. Because I think that sometimes can help free up the noise a little bit, in my past at least. Because if I know why I'm doing tempo, then I know now what I'm trying to get out of the set. Does that make sense? So
Yeah,
like take
totally.
here's a great example. I'm not sure if you guys have me on Instagram. I know a couple of you do. I have a pendulum squat. Pendulum squat has one problem with it. It loses tension in the bottom, right? And if you lose the tension in the bottom, then what happens is you kind of bounce. And if you know what I'm yeah, Matt, you're like, yep, you do. And so you'll bounce in and out. And it's not because you're trying to, because it actually like the resistance profile drops off. And then if you don't control, you'll literally bounce in and out. And so for me, tempo on that machine is so much more important. Yeah, nobody likes it. But like so much more important, because if you don't control tempo, what happens is again, you'll bounce. Then if you get bounced, and that's going to turn into, knee wobble. And then if it turns into knee wobble, your feet are going to pronate, or you're going to overly do something else, right? And then it turns into this, like it's almost like you've knocked over dominoes and now you're downward. So for me, tempo isn't about tempo. Tempo is about control. It's like, oh, okay, I get it now. That's the point. It's control we're after. So now I'm not counting. I'm looking at acceleration, deceleration, right? It's like, am I accelerating into the hole? Yeah, don't do that, right? And then it simplifies it for me. But yeah, Andrew, is that something that you can chime in on?
That's funny because it was just, I think, just a couple of days ago, we were, excuse me, going over some coaching cues, and I'll use the heels elevated back squat for an example, and kind of that same thought because so many people say that as far as, man, when I start to think or fixate on the number as I'm going down, I start to lose my concentration on what I'm actually trying to do during this set, right? So kind of two trains of thought potentially within that. Like we know, stick to the tempo, and everybody's going to fall across the spectrum a little bit different. For people that feel very comfortable, don't have any limitations at the ankle or scale, like you feel very dialed in with that movement, maybe it's not even a thought for you. But for others, they still have this habit of sending their hips back, even though their heels are elevated and they have the room to keep tension through the quads the whole time. So it's like bars unracked, I'm getting ready to go. 3 second eccentric. Okay, here we go. And a variety of thoughts could happen, right? Some people will literally count one, two, three. Some people will say, keep tension in the quad. Other people will say, don't let my butt go back. So you just back to the original intent. You're trying to grow your quads, trying to stick to the sets and reps, try to stick to the superset, get your heart rate up, like, try to maintain the rest period if you're trying to actually lift for strength in that moment. It all still goes back to intent.
That's awesome. Matt, you got something?
Yeah, actually, I have a question for Nate, if Nate's there. Nate, here's a question for you. On a 1 to 10 simple scale, before going to camp, how effective do you believe you were at creating tension and stimulus during training, pre-camp?
Is that based on what I thought at the time or what I think now?
Well, I think you understand where the question's gonna go.
I would say on a say 1 to 10, I'd say 7 for stimulating reps. And then I guess after the camp, like nine.
Why do you think that it bumped up from a seven to a nine? What do you think changed?
So the exercise in particular was back squat, and it was like the bracing. I ended up doing, Steve was there coaching me and cueing me, but I ended up doing like a PR. Actually, I blew my previous PR out of the water, and it felt fine. I could have actually gotten more, and so that kind of like helped me to realize, like, wow, okay, I thought that this was like my maximum, but it turns out like there's actually a lot more headroom there. And I was fine, like I wasn't hurt, I felt strong. So yeah.
That's awesome, man. So from a seven pre-camp to a nine post-camp, and then
Yeah.
specifically in like a specific exercise where you're trying to hit a PR and you felt you had more in the tank, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. How effective do you believe that the compounding effect of now executing at a nine over a 10 across the next year will be for you?
Oh, it's I'm already seeing the benefits of it. Just to, and since I've gotten back, I've given myself a goal of putting on muscle. Actually, 30 pounds is the goal. And I'm already like ticking along at a rate that I'm kind of in disbelief on the scale every time I check in. Because because of my age, it's one of those things where it's just like you're not supposed to add this type of muscle, in your 40s. And so like I'm surprising myself really, like post camp. Which then motivates me more to, dig in. And Steve's really been helping me to like comb through, like where's the low-hanging fruit? Like where are the ways that we can, whether it's recovery, whether it's, spending time at the ends of ranges. For me personally, I tend to just give out at the bottom of like lunges or squats. And, that's an area that, like I'm weak at. And so if I hang out there, like that's low hanging fruit for muscle growth, So Steve's been giving me a whole bunch of lunges. And initially I was cursing him, but now I love him.
Now you're thanking him.
Yeah.
We call that getting comfortable in the pocket.
Right.
Sounds like you're also breaking some self-limiting beliefs, and that 40 is the new 30. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. For everybody else on the call that hasn't attended a camp or that maybe doesn't have the ability to, maybe you're thinking, well, how do we do that? Hey, like, how do we now take our 7 out of 10 to a 9 out of 10? And the answer is to film as much as possible from your training and send it into your coach to get it evaluated. Anything that you would add to that, Steve?
Oh no, I agree. I agree. A thing to think about too, to kind of add nuance to both what you just said, is that one of the things that happens in the camp, whether or not the guys know they're going through it or not, is when you gain movement mastery, then what you're doing is you're adding stimulus to the muscles, right? So what does that mean in exercise? Like a resistance profile is going to dictate what fibers are under load, right? So if you are in a pattern and you're actually getting badly, like let's look at a squat. I did a video on this recently where, like, if you are going down and then you guys ever seen a squatter, then their hips shoot back, right? And maybe not even all the time, maybe only when it gets heavy. But then they'll say, but I got up, I made it, I made the rep. And it's like, that, cool. If your goal was making the rep, that's great. But you didn't use your quads that rep. Okay. And then what happens is the next week they come back at it and they're like, why didn't I get stronger? Why is it still hard there? Because you avoided using the muscle. So the answer isn't use the muscle under that heavy load, because obviously the movement showed that the person could not. Like, you guys, if you can take a cue from this, is that you cannot cue weak muscles into being strong. You can't do that. So I can't just come over to Matt's and put 500 pounds on his back and say, squat this perfect. If he can, he can. If he can't, he can't. Can't just yell at him, because it doesn't work like that, right? And people will think that you can. They'll give these cues saying knees forward. It's like, if he's trying. He's trying. We'll find out where he can do that with. And then eventually the weight will get too hard and then he'll shift into dominancies, right? And that could be biomechanics, like long femurs. It could just be the way his quads are. It could be like he has a strong back, something else, right? So the point is that, like, when you're going through a motion like a squat, where it has a vertical pattern, I'm using this as like a verbal or a visual. So if you guys can picture it in your mind, and the ass come back, pushing back, the quads come away. So that's, now we're getting into like moment arm stuff. But basically, vertical line, bar path, quads are now behind the bar. That means that during that portion of lift, the quads are getting no stimulus. It's not happening. So then when you're trying to grow those muscles, they're not getting the stimulus. So then what happens is now you've created that domino effect weekly now of not growing your quads. Does that make sense? So what is movement stimulus? What are we trying to do? We're trying to create that mastery so that when it gets hard, and this comes back to Nate's question earlier, it's like, where is a bad rep? How do I know if I'm cheating? Because you won't go there. You just won't go to that point, because you'll get such a good stimulus or a good skill with the motion that you'd be like, I can't do another rep without shifting back. And so you just won't do it. You're like, I'm done, right? Like, would you guys ever like do a bench press and then like your foot comes up and it's like, obviously not, that's stupid, right? But that's essentially it. Like, you're shifting back. You're like, save me lower back. And then you're like, why are my quads not growing? But again, because it comes from that old school belief of movements grow muscles rather than stimulus or tension grows muscles. Does that make sense, guys? Yeah, I love that. There was a question in the chat I wanted to ask or answer about time. It's a kind of a cool thing. So if you look at the amount of time that typically takes for people to like get stimulated reps in like their newbie kind of phase, it's usually around 45 seconds, right? Of like an actual set. It seems to be around there, because it's, you know, typical set of 8 to 12. A lot of leading research now is coming out that it's like 5 to 8 seems to be like perfect. But here's the caveat, right? When weights go up, what has to also go up? Movement mastery, right? So if you move up the weight and you suck, then either you're not doing what you think you're doing, and all those reps are the guy doing basically a good morning as a squat. Yeah, risk of injury goes up, all these things, right? Or you're actually not lifting as heavy as you thought you were, right? And that's kind of the thought. So it's not about lifting heavy. It's about being like thinking about strength more like a dimmer switch, you know, like a light switch, like a dimmer switch. As you increase it, you get more, it gets brighter. You're able to increase it like a dimmer switch. Whereas a lot of people have untuned nervous systems, their strength is more like a light switch. It's like you're bench pressing 10 pounds aside, and you put like a Cheerio on the end, it's like thump, and it just falls and they can't press it. So our goal is to increase that so you can do that. But to go back to the timing question, the reason why that's interesting is because if you instead ask, well, what happens to the psychology in a set if you constrict yourself to either a rep count or a time, then now you've already told your subconscious that's where the set ends. So then you're probably just going to stop, right? Or you guys ever notice that, like, when you're spotting somebody or when you're even go through it yourself, conveniently the rep that you know, the number that your coach said to do is always the hardest one. You ever notice that? Like, how did he know? How did he know 15 would be the hardest one? The answer is, we don't, it's you. Meaning, like, it's that you've set it up in your head that that's going to be the hardest one. I remember I had a client a long time ago. Her name is Claire. This girl was just so strong. And she was just also kind of mental. So it's funny, because she'd be doing lat pull downs and like 9. And she's like, 10, right? Just like struggling. And I'd be like, okay, 10 more. And she's like, okay. And I'm like, oh, so now you can rep again. But she was failing because she thought she only had 10 to do. But he says, what happens? Like, people set themselves up. So if you flip that question, right, and you say, like, I have 40 seconds, that's what I'm going to do, then what happens if you could have done 5 more? Like, are you just going to stop? And then you're not getting those stimulating reps, right? What's up, Greg?
No, I love that point you just made about that lady that was doing lat pull downs. When I used to work with Gavin in the gym, we used to do something similar. So we used to go, all right, folks, we used to do like group personal training. And we'd be like, okay, guys, pick a weight that you could do for 10 and no more, like genuinely no more. We'd put them on the bench and we'd do something similar. So we'd be like, right, 8, 9, 10. Okay, keep going, keep going, keep going. And they'd get to like 25, 26 reps. And we'd be like, that's about half the weight of what you need for 10 reps. Stop, you know, messing around.
There's no girls on the call right now, I think, right? Even if there is, this isn't offensive to women. It's just that it seems to be about them. In my experience, women are the worst for this, because they just don't believe they're as strong as they are. They've gotten this notion, again, it's a social media thing. It's a thing that's been spiraling in their world. And they think that they can lift for volume. And then the second it gets mildly uncomfortable, they just stop. And then they just floof up their hair again, right? And it's like, no, like you need to go until it sucks. There's no, if anything, if you guys look up a girl named Steffi Cohen, she's probably one of the strongest humans alive. She really is. Her strength weight ratio, it's insane. She's one of the strongest humans alive. She's like 132 pounds and she can back squat 505 for like five reps. It's insane. It's like, it's absolutely insane what this woman can do. She's not like, she's jacked, but she's not like massive. She's just like a tiny little jacked Mexican girl. And anyway, my point is that like, I had this client, Greg, that I was training her in my house and she came over and she was showing me her session and she was like, why are my quads not growing? So I had her on the hack squat. I was like, hey, you do your thing, warm up to a weight that you can do like 8 to 12 of, right? And then, so I was like, we're going to work until failure. You're like, okay. So she gets to 8. I'm like, okay, keep going, keep going. Like, and I'm not lying. She got to 60. 6-0. Like, first of all, do you like, what kind of world of pain was she in, right? And then secondly, it's like, if that was actually where she got, that means that she was working at what does that mean? Like 1/600th of the effort that she needed in order to get results. That's like me going in there. If I need 400 pounds for a back squat to challenge my quads and me putting on 4 pounds and being like, why are my quads not coming? Right. And people forget this. I don't know why they've forgotten it, but like they've forgotten in this last 5 years that like weight matters. I think it spiraled from this, you need to lift light community, but I don't think that was ever the notion. I think that the original intention with you need to lift light is you need to understand the form. You need to understand what the form's about. It's about trying to keep tension on the muscles. It's not just arbitrary form. There's no correct form because form for you, Greg, is a completely different conversation than form for me or Matt's. Like you're a tall guy. Like, I don't even know what to tell you to do with back squats. And then don't do them. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, just don't do them. There's no back squats for you. Leg extensions and split squats until you die. And it's like, yep, that's pretty much my life. And so it's like, yeah. So how do you say that? Right. But yeah, it's a weird, weird world. So anyways, guys, I just realized the time we were kind of ranting. Anybody have questions that I did not get to? You guys all good? Okay. Well, thank you for tuning in, coaches. Thank you for chiming in. I always appreciate it. And guys, please, again, if you're interested in the camp, just pop over to the Telegram chat. I think the link's in there, right, Greg or Andrew? Everything's there. Yeah. Okay, guys, have a great night. Okay.